Welcome to the Angie Does Stuff podcast, a chattier, less visually appealing version of the Angie Does Stuff YouTube channel. If you're new here, thank you so much for joining me. And if you're a returning subscriber, thank you for coming back. So if you're a viewer of the Angie Does Stuff YouTube channel, then you know my channel mostly focuses on petrified wood and fossil hunting with some DIYs thrown in, often relating to fossils somehow, and occasional car content, but it's also about other stuff I do in an attempt to live my life to the fullest. But tonight, I wanted to talk about deception. The kind of little white lies you tell the occasional random person just to make things go easier or smoother because it's just too complicated to explain the truth. You know, the lies you tell complete strangers when you're out geocaching or hunting for rocks. Today, we're going to discuss geocaching and how we cover our tracks when we're out. But before we get started, here's a word from our sponsor. And we're back. So let's talk about geocaching. It's an outdoor adventure, and people seem to either love it or hate it. If you're not familiar, it's like a scavenger hunt based around using GPS to find little hidden containers or caches. The larger ones contain little prizes or trinkets, and you can swap stuff out if you want, and all caches, regardless of size, contain a log, a paper log. When you locate the cache using your GPS unit or a phone app, you sign the log, and then you electronically log it through the app. There's no money to win, there's no prize, it's just a great way to get outdoors and see places you wouldn't see otherwise, and practice using some stealth and cunning to keep from revealing the location to any non-cacher who may be watching, because sometimes those people like to steal, destroy, or remove them for no real good reason. So what do you do when you're trying to get a cache that's in an area with heavy traffic? Do you just put it off for another time, create a distraction, or what? If you're like me, you're going to find ways to do what you want to do, and no random muggle, that's what we call non-cachers, is going to ruin my fun. You have to get creative, and sometimes creative equals not telling what's really going on because it takes too long, and sometimes people don't believe you or they don't understand. There are plenty of instances where cachers haven't been careful enough, and bystanders have called the police because they thought the cache was a drug drop or something sinister. I've had the cops called on me because I was nosing around somewhere that, although it was perfectly legal, they thought I was a hooker. Thanks, College Station PD, but that's a story for another episode. When the cops are involved, obviously I always tell the truth about what I'm doing, and sometimes they even help look, like in the instance of when they accused me of being a hooker. It's easier to just try to avoid being seen altogether, so using stealth is extremely important, but it's just not always possible. Sometimes it's better to hide in plain sight. So, what does one do exactly when they're trying to find a cache in a heavily populated area but don't want to give away the cache location? Create a persona, make up a story, include props, and really lean into it, that's what. Have fun with it. If there's only one piece of advice I can give a new cacher who doesn't have time to wait around for muggles to move on, it would be this. People rarely ask questions of a person holding a clipboard and a pen. I don't know why. If you have an ID badge on a lanyard, even better. Doesn't matter where it's from, they aren't going to look. I can't remember the circumstances of why I was so set on getting this one particular cache on this one particular day at this one particular time, but I think it was because it was close to my job and I was stopping at several on the way home and I had a streak or something I was trying to keep up, so I absolutely had to get this one. The problem was, it was a small magnetic key holder under a park bench on the perimeter of a very busy playground. So I knew what I had to do. I pulled out a clipboard, grabbed a pen, and put on my ID badge from work backwards. I walked over to the playground, and being the only one without a child to accompany me, everyone was looking at me. I sat down on the right bench and noticed one particular woman kind of staring at me. I scribbled a few notes on my paper, and by notes I mean poorly sketched dogs, and then got up and walked around the play structure. I stopped in a few intervals, drew a puppy, and walked on. Then the woman came up to me. We'll come back to the main story after a brief break. So, I feel like it's time for our fun fossil fact. You've heard of the Gold Rush, but what about the Great Dinosaur Rush? In an event dubbed the Bone Wars, two well-known paleontologists became rivals and entered into a 15-year competition of fossil hunting. Edward Drinker Cope, an Othniel Charles Marsh battled it out from 1877 to 1892. They were petty, petty paleontologists, too, doing whatever they could do to get ahead, including bribery, theft, and tampering of bones. Was there a winner? Yeah, we all won. Cope found 56 new species, and Marsh topped out at 80 new species of dinosaur. Altogether, we have been gifted with 136 new species due to these guys, including the most popular dinosaur species we know today. Now, back to the story. And we're back in the park. The woman walked up to me and said hi. I didn't feel like going through the dysfunctional dance, so I just came right out and told her that I was a private contractor hired to evaluate the safety and condition of the playground. And don't you know, that woman ran with it. She began leading me around the playground, showing me everything that was broken, loose, or possibly dangerous, right down to what she considered to be design flaws in the actual play structure and wanted them changed, like the bar going over the slide that holds the uprights together. She wanted to know who was going to get this evaluation, and I kind of panicked. We made our way around back to the bench with the geocache, so I sat down, intentionally dropped my pen between the bench slats, and got down on the ground to find the key holder while under the guise of picking up my pen. I mumbled a few things while I grabbed it, but she continued to press me, and I just ended up blurting, "The HOA meeting! The board will evaluate the report and discuss at the next meeting." She seemed quite satisfied, and she said she would definitely be attending because she wanted her voice heard. To this day, I still wonder if she went to that meeting and what the board said when she asked about the playground safety audit. But it's not always like that. Sometimes I have to act like I'm a total moron to be able to find a cache under extenuating circumstances, like the time my friend Randy placed a cache on my honor in front of a very busy, very exclusive, pay-to-be-a-member kind of club. Being blonde at the time, I got away with acting brainless, and I played that part quite well. Or maybe I wasn't playing. The club's perimeter was a chain-link fence, and it was patrolled by security guards on golf carts. Between the fence and the street, it was nothing but bull rock, a couple of boulders, and a small tree or two. Simple to maintain. So Randy placed this cache in my name, and as such, I was the default for the first to find, which is a competitive little badge of honor bestowed upon those who are the first to find a newly published cache. But I didn't know if people would respect the, hey, it's named after me so I get to get it first thing, so I raced to get there. I parked behind the building next door and walked over to where it was supposed to be. I was fairly sure I knew what kind of container I was looking for, but it wasn't going to be easy in all those rocks. I needed time, and those security guards weren't going to give it to me. When they came up to question me about my activity, it was at night, of course, I had to think fast. I told them that I was driving home with my toddler in the back seat. I had given him my key ring to play with because he was fussy, and he managed to roll the window down and toss the keys out, and to the best of my ability, I was able to tell that they land on the rocks. And my house key was on it, so I couldn't get in my home until I found them. I thought that would be good enough, but oh no, these were good security guards and they insisted on helping. So there I was, with my real keys in the vehicle and needing to find a way to palm a fake hollow rock, sign the log, get it back in the exact same spot, and then bow out without them seeing what was really going on. It was me and two security guards, head down in the rocks, scanning with flashlights in the dark. I managed to get the cache and put it in my hoodie pouch. I told them I'd left my phone in the car and I'd be right back. I signed the log in the car, grabbed a ring of keys, managed to replace the cache exactly, kind of tossed the keys down when a truck passed by and allowed the security guard to find my keys and save the night. And sometimes the deception is much more simple than that. We'll be right back with more in a few moments. Each episode, I want to give a shout out to a fellow creator that I really enjoy and tell y'all about them so you can connect with their content as well. I call this segment the Creator Spotlight. Tonight, I want to give some attention to Agate Dad on YouTube. Agate Dad is a Minnesota resident with a love for both agates and his two sons. He does lapidary videos, rock hounding, lots of Lake Superior agate searching, some geode stuff, and a few giveaways here and there for milestones. If you're like me and figure you'll probably never make it up north to find Lake Superior agates yourself, you should give Taylor a follow and live vicariously. And we're back. Sometimes it helps to just tell passersby you lost something in the bushes. One time I told a guy that a few hours before I had been riding in the car with a friend and we were getting pulled over. But since I had drugs in the car and didn't want to go to jail, I threw them out the window and they landed in the bushes. I'd come back to retrieve them. He insisted on helping. That's a very weird trend in Texas. People are super helpful here. It's just how we're bred. In that case, I knew what the cash container was, so I told the guy I was looking for a film canister. And don't you know, he was the one who found it. He didn't even ask what was in it or anything. He just handed the canister over, told me to have fun and stay safe, and went on down the street. One I really love, and I use this for a variety of situations, not just caching, is the, "Have you seen my drone?" line. Before you get out there, it helps to have a picture from the internet of a random kid holding a drone. Download it to your gallery so you can show it to people who look confused by why you're rummaging around in foliage. Tell them you're looking for the drone, and the last thing the camera saw before going black was, well, whatever landscape you're in at the moment. Tell them it wasn't terribly expensive, but your kid, or brother, or nephew, or whatever, really loved it, and you just want to find it. Most people aren't going to help with that, especially if bushwhacking is involved. I've also pretended to be an entomology student examining trees in a park to check for parasites, again with a clipboard, but it worked because I was bumbling around in undergrowth and trees right on the very edge of a busy walking path. I didn't want people to think I was going to jump out at them or that I was relieving myself. The clipboard makes you look official, and people like official. Official doesn't garner many questions, apparently, unless you're on a playground. By and large, acting like you're trying to find a lost item is the best way to get people to either help or leave you alone. Either way, it gives you the time you need to find the cash and move on. I don't think lying is always the best thing to do. I mean, lying in general isn't the best way to live. But I've noticed that in some situations, the general public not knowing about a hidden cache is better than the possibility of getting another person into the hobby through an explanation. Especially people who aren't particularly outdoorsy, they just don't get it. And they don't like the idea of strangers crawling around their parks under benches or whatever, and if they knew, they'd remove them and toss them. Geocachers aren't bad people. We're a little weird, sure, but we're not dropping off drugs in a stash, we're not putting caches in places where it would be illegal to place them, and there are very strict rules, and the admins will reject caches that don't follow the rules, and we're not concerned with anyone else. We're just outside to have fun and not bother anybody. I think it's best to be honest with people as often as is practical, but really it seems like sometimes it's just better to say whatever you need to say to get the cache log signed and replaced and move on to the next. Well, y'all, that's all I've got for you today. Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed today's show. Please join me back here next week when I talk about more stuff. Bye!